Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau from Compassionate Cooks. I founded Compassionate Cooks to empower people to make informed food choices and to debunk myths about vegetarianism and animal rights. You can learn more about who we are and what we do by visiting our website, CompassionateCooks.com. I also encourage you to visit and join our message board to find community and camaraderie and support. You can find it by going to CompassionateCooks.com and clicking on our message board under writings or podcast. And I also want to remind you that if you want to spread the word about this podcast in a way that would actually encourage people to listen, we now have podcast sampler CDs and you can order them at our website. The sponsor for today's episode is a very special woman named Jenica Maxwell. I'd like to share her very beautiful email with you. She wrote, "Dear Colleen, I feel a little self-conscious writing to you. I know that's probably a little unremarkable. I'm one of the many who feel touched by your podcast. Your words awoke compassion in me that I had been hiding. When you speak, I feel like I'm listening to an old friend or a beloved professor. I hope I manage to articulate all that I intend. I'm 25 years old, but a classic example of what the American diet and lifestyle will lead to. I'm overweight. I've had my gallbladder removed, and I've had a recurring staph infection for which I've had 5 separate surgeries. I was very depressed about my life. I felt drained emotionally and physically. I tried a lot of different diets, and yet my body just seemed defective. I often joked that I wanted to take it back for a refund. The truth is, it wasn't my body. It was my toxic lifestyle. About 6 months ago, I bought a copy of Rory Friedman's diet book, which I won't state by name because I like you too much to swear at you, and was intrigued when I read The Benefits of a Vegetarian, okay, Vegan, Diet. I know this may sound odd, but I live in small town Utah. Nobody had ever said to me, meat bad, vegetables good. The funny thing, more funny sad than funny ha-ha, is that as a child, I had incredible compassion for animals, probably no more than most other children, but I remember crying when my cousins stepped on ants. I envisioned that ants had these complex underground societies, and I knew in my heart those worlds were as important as our own human world. My parents always had to guide me away from petitioners at the zoos and rodeos they took me to. I think all children are attuned to injustice and get it at an instinctive level that adults intellectualize away from. Thanks to Kim and Rory's book, I stopped eating meat, but I wasn't ready to listen to the ethical argument. I was doing it for my health, and I wasn't ready to go vegan. I think of my resistance to veganism as a wall, and if someone had come slamming into the wall, they would have just gotten flattened. But when pieces were removed, brick by brick, I was able to let the message slip through until finally the wall was completely gone. Fast forward to 3 weeks ago. I downloaded your podcasts on transitioning and the one on teenage vegetarians. I'm not a teen, but it's at college age, so I felt I qualified. As I listened, I felt so touched by the beautiful stories you shared. I felt a deep quiet in my soul and truly present in the moment in a way I had not felt in a long time. I downloaded more podcasts and subscribed and felt your message sink into my deluded brain. I had worried about being perfect, about the pressure I'd face from family, about giving up cheese, but at your suggestion, I watched PETA's Meet Your Meat, and looking at those poor victims of human consumption, I knew, and once I knew, I had to change. I'm glad of you. I know this sounds a little Pollyanna, but I just wanted you to know. I'm glad you exist, and I'm happy to be able to help you in this small way. My own journey has been wonderful. I know I'm just on the first steps, but I'm so excited to learn all I can. I am an effusively joyful vegan. I tell everyone I know how great this decision has been for me. Since going vegetarian, I've lost 40 pounds, and my health has improved so much. And while those were the results I was really interested in when I started this thing, I find that they aren't the results that really matter to me now. I was so surprised to find my ability to feel increased, my capacity for love, joy, and sorrow all expanded. I feel like my diet reflects the person I am, the person I want to be. So thank you for that, and thank you for all you do." I told you it was special. Thank you, Jenica. Please drop me a line to let me know how you're doing. I really love to hear back from you all when you write to me those really beautiful, heartfelt emails. I want follow-up. I want to know how it's going now. And I really encourage you to join the message board, because then you can really connect with other people who've had the same experience you have, and you can find friends and people in your area and just people online to be able to connect with. So thank you so much for your sponsorship, and thank you to all the sponsors. You can sponsor anytime for any amount, either one time or ongoing, and please visit CompassionateCooks.com. Thank you all very much. Now, in case you don't know it, in case you haven't figured it out, my favorite topic of conversation is all things vegan, ethics of veganism, animal rights, animals. It's my favorite topic. And well, my close favorite is film. I do have to admit that my close favorite is film and literature, right up there with animal rights and veganism. And luckily, my husband is also a literature freak and a film freak. We met in a bookstore. I don't know if you knew that. And we started dating in grad school, where we were both getting our master's in English literature. So veganism, animal rights, film, literature, favorite topics of conversation. And when they all join together, I'm in heaven. Literally, I experience bliss, which is why I love being able to draw these things together on this podcast. I've got so many books in my head that I want to write about these topics together that sometimes I think my head will explode, but hopefully it will not explode before I finish recording this episode. So I just wanted to make that clear. The other thing I want to make clear is that I do talk about this stuff all the time with my very patient husband, with my friends, with all of you, but my absolute favorite people to talk about this stuff with, surprisingly, are strangers. I don't know if it's surprising. Maybe it's not surprising. I'm an advocate. That's what I do. I want to talk to people about this issue. So I love the opportunity to talk about it. It's not out there in the public sphere the way it should be, and I really want to get it out there as much as I can. But the problem is I don't encounter very many strangers. I work from home in my safe little vegan world, surrounded by vegan friends and a vegan husband. When I entertain, vegans come over. And when I go to other people's houses, I'm surrounded by vegan friends and my vegan husband again. We go to restaurants. We're mostly in vegetarian restaurants. And again, I'm surrounded by crazy vegans. When I teach cooking classes or give lectures, the people coming are already interested in vegetarianism. I mean, they are strangers in a way. So they're interested in talking about veganism, obviously. But it's different than when you just have these kind of spontaneous conversations with people who are outside your circle. Now, I know this is very different from what a lot of people experience, even what my husband experienced. I know y'all work with non-vegetarians all day. You're exposed to rude comments, ungracious comments, insensitive comments or responses, jokes, and you may even come home to a non-vegetarian spouse or partner or parents. And I know that we've talked about this before. You get tired of having to defend yourself all the time. You may even get tired of having this conversation. And though I've just described this happy vegan world I live in, I do know what you're experiencing. I have been there. I mean, as much as I love to have this conversation, I do remember how exhausting it can be. I remember the snide comments, and I do hear them from time to time. If we're at a mixed party at one of my husband's friends' houses or coworkers, I hear the stupid jokes. I get it. So I know your pain. I feel your pain, and I did my time. And though I may not be exposed to people eating animals all the time, you know, I'm exposed to the behind-the-scenes horrors of all of this. I go there to do this work, to do the research, to bring out this hidden information, to bring it out into the open. I expose myself to a lot of upsetting things. And I do think it would be a lot different. In fact, I remember that it was a lot different if I had to do this research, you know, see all of the stuff behind the scenes, and then at the same time, see people eating animals and read advertisements and see advertisements on TV and see billboards and et cetera. I know it would be really difficult to do. I remember I did it. And there was a time when I did it. There was a time when it was very traumatizing and when I was around a lot of non-vegetarian people all the time. So I really understand how exhausting it can be, but I also find that it's a really great opportunity. Now, I know you're saying, yeah, sure, that's easy for you to say. You're not around these people all the time. But like I just said, I used to be around all the time. And, you know, I created what I have now. I've created this climate that I live in. I created this based on what I wanted to do. So I chose this very purposefully. And, you know, the other thing about that is that I just really encourage you to take these as opportunities, because the more you have these encounters, I think, the better you get at handling them. So consider it practice, because I know when you first Become vegan. I think a lot of people don't really anticipate the kind of responses you get from people. I think people are genuinely surprised and taken back by the hostility, by the anger that people have about you being vegan. And we've talked about that. You know where that comes from. That comes from the mirror that you're holding up. And I think when you first start out and you get these responses and you have to have this conversation, I think in the beginning it can be really hard. So of course I'll give you that. But just consider that the more you have this conversation, the better you get. So I love having these encounters with people. I love being the vegan in the room. I love having a dialogue about these issues and giving people a different perspective than the one they already have. Because obviously in this meat dominant world, we're bombarded with this message all the time, constantly. It's hard to get away from it. Though I make a valiant effort to get away from it, so much so that if I actually see someone eating meat, it's very jarring for me. And I, for a moment, think that they're maybe eating vegetarian meat. And then I have to remind myself that no, they're eating animals. So I know we're bombarded with this image all the time, but you know, we can get away from it. If you want to get away from it a little bit, you can get rid of your television set. You don't have to see these commercials. Obviously, I don't have the Food Network, so I don't see all of the meat that's in these television shows. And you know, it's comforting. People ask me a lot how I do this work, how I look at this all the time and not feel sad and hopeless all the time. Well, part of it is that I don't stare at it all the time. I don't look at it all the time. And it is healing to be able to do that. It is very helpful to be able to kind of avert my gaze and not see it all the time. So there's ways you can do it too, even if you don't do exactly what I do. So just keep that in mind. But we grow up eating this stuff. Our parents eat this stuff. Our friends eat this stuff. Our coworkers eat it. And everyone agrees, yes, this is the way to eat. Yes, we're supposed to eat animals. Yes, of course, animals were here for us. And we're all like automatons walking around believing this stuff. And then we create these really specious arguments for why we should continue eating animals, or these romantic arguments that nobody questions until that vegan pokes her head up, that damn vegan who ruins everything by just being vegan, by just offering another way to live, by just showing that there's another way to live, another way to eat. And that's why we need to speak up, because if everyone just goes along the merry way, never challenging the lies that we're told about animals and their place in this world, then nothing will change. It's up to us to offer a different perspective. It's up to us to speak up for the animals. It's up to us to speak the truth. It's up to us to speak up. And the more we do this, the easier it gets, and you might come to love it as much as I do. And when you do it a lot, you come to find your own voice. You find your own comfort level, your own way of reading people. People fascinate me. The human mind, the human behavior, human psychology, it all fascinates me. I love watching people. I could sit in a park all day long and just watch people. I'm one of those really annoying people who, when in a restaurant, like I can figure out like who's on a first date, what they're talking about, if there's some discomfort, you know, kind of what the relationship is. And my poor husband, because we're out to eat and I'll be distracted by what's going on at the table next to me because I love to guess what's going on. And he'll be like, hello, I'm over here. Hi, right here. And I'll be like, I know, but I heard someone say vegetarian and I heard this really interesting conversation and I'm trying to hear the rest. So wait, hang on. And he's like, okay, I thought we were out to dinner. So I'm really fascinated by human behavior. I can't help it. I love to figure people out. And for me, that's part of the fun, if you will, of having this conversation with strangers. I do not have a pat response for every person I meet. I have, you know, obviously certain responses to certain ridiculous arguments that people have, but I don't have a pat response with the same intonation and the same inflection with every person I meet. Obviously, it's customized according to the situation, according to how much time I might have to respond, according to what that person has just said, and my wheels are constantly spinning. So that's part of what I enjoy about these encounters, customizing them based on who I'm talking to. And I've learned how to steer the conversation into a direction that will bring this topic to the foreground, which is really easy to do because my theory is that people do want to talk about these issues. I know a lot of people say people don't want to hear it. They just say, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to hear it. And I actually disagree. I actually think that people do want to hear about it. They just have to hear about it in a very particular way. So, for instance, if I meet a stranger, you know, and they ultimately ask what I do, I rarely say I teach vegetarian cooking classes. I mean, it's hard to kind of sum up what I do anyway in one sentence, but I rarely say, oh, I'm a vegetarian guide. I teach vegetarian cooking classes. I usually say something like, I teach cooking classes. And almost every time they say, really, that's so neat. Like, what kind of cooking classes? And now they're engaged. Now they're interested. Now their imagination has been sparked. If I said just, I teach vegetarian cooking classes and they've got some hang up about vegetarianism, I haven't eased them into it. You know, I just kind of went right for it. So then I say vegetarian, I teach vegetarian cooking classes, and they go, oh, that's really cool. You know, I've been thinking about vegetarian, and can you answer some questions I have? And that's how it happens every time. Now, again, it's customized according to who I talk to. So another example is recently David and I were in this little boutique in San Francisco, this cute little place, and you know, jewelry and whatever. And you know, David's tortured and has to stand around while I'm looking at necklaces. And we were in a neighborhood that was new to us, and I wanted to ask the clerk her opinion about where to eat. Now, there were cute little restaurants all over the street. We could have figured it out, but I wanted to see what she had to say. So I said, can you recommend any places to get a nice salad or sandwich around here? And she said, well, yeah, there's such and such a place, and they've got some salad. And they've got sandwiches, and then there's this other place, and there's this other place that has really good burgers. And that was all I needed. That was it. And so I said with a smile, I said, oh, thanks, we're vegetarian. We're looking for vegetarian. And now you might note I didn't say vegan. I might say vegan, depends on the circumstances, but I just kind of know that word still scares people. And so I gauge the situation first before I just say vegan. And what was really adorable about this woman is that she said, oh, sorry, well, such and such a place does have vegetarian salad, so I know you'll find stuff there, but I don't know about vegan. She said vegan. It was really cute. Now, I had never said anything. I didn't say vegan. I didn't say vegan. I never said anything about it. She did. So that was another in. And I said, still smiling very pleasantly, I said, actually, we're vegan, but that's cool. I said, we'll find something there. I'm sure we'll find something at that restaurant. And from there, a conversation just started. There was kind of warmth. You know, it was really friendly. I didn't reject her suggestion. I didn't have this air of superiority, like, no, 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 it's vegan. You know, that's really not going to go over well with people. So we found a common ground. And from there, she said, you know, I'm trying to eat vegetarian. I'm trying to eat healthier. And I said, well, I teach cooking classes. That's what I do. I teach, you know, cooking classes around the area. And she was like, really? That's so cool. And my son's daughter is vegetarian. And do you have gift certificates? And I'd love to get her a gift certificate. And yeah, I just said, sure. You know, here I've got gifts. Here's a card. You know, if you want to check out the website, check it out. You know, just kind of low key. And she did follow up. She called me and followed up. So, you know, so she, that was cool. You know, it was a really good interaction. Now, I realize my situation enabled me to mention the fact that I teach cooking classes, vegan cooking classes, or another time I might mention that I have a podcast or a cookbook or whatever, but that's just my story. You know, for you, it might be something else. You might have said the same thing, oh, we're vegan, but thanks anyway. And then you could have offered her a card that has websites on it that you think people should check out, right? You can carry Why Vegan brochures with you. You can carry the podcast sampler CDs. Hello, that's why I made these things. The bottom line is that it's really effective if you could put something in someone's hand so that they can follow up later on, because that's what happens. Their wheels start turning. And if you make it easy for them to follow up with the resources, then it's a really good thing to do. It's really effective. And I also find that if your attitude is that people want this information, you will be pleasantly surprised again and again. If your attitude is that people are cruel and they're selfish and they don't want to know, that perception will be reinforced for you again and again, and you won't accomplish anything. Now, this is not to say that I don't get frustrated. I do, but I operate from a hopeful place. I give people the benefit of the doubt, and I operate from a hopeful place rather than from a cynical, angry, hopeless place. And all I can say is that works for me. It works for me on land, and it works for me in the air, in airplanes. So, what I'd like to share with you today are some recent encounters I've had on airplanes, the good and the bad encounters, how I handled them, and how I responded to some typical questions about animal rights or veganism, particularly those regarding religion. So, my hope is that this will also give you some thoughts about some frequently asked questions about these subjects, while at the same time just sharing with you how I handled them. Now, airplane conversations can be really awesome because if it's going well, you have several hours to talk to this person. If it goes poorly, however, it can be a nightmare because you're stuck with that person next to you the entire flight. But throwing caution to the wind, I don't shy away from these opportunities. And recently, I've been traveling a lot, giving talks all over the place and flying on planes and sitting in airports. And when I travel with David, we pretty much keep to ourselves, and I don't usually talk to people sitting next to me. That's not entirely true. I do sometimes, but it most often happens, these encounters most often happen when I travel alone. And it's not like I'm starting these conversations. That's what's so great about this issue being veganism, animal rights, etc. It takes virtually nothing for a conversation to start around this issue. I believe that people really want to talk about it. Some want to make fun of it. Some want to spout off their own crazy theories. Some want to justify their behavior. But a lot of people really want to talk about it. They want the perspective of vegans and animal advocates because they probably haven't encountered them very often and they'd like to know what they think about certain things. And so it's a really good opportunity for them. So that's why I think it's pretty easy for this topic to come up. Now, not very long ago, I did a series of talks in three different cities. So the flights to and from these cities have completely melded into one. I went from California to Denver to Detroit to Cleveland and back to California with stopovers in between. And on one of these legs, the layover was long enough that I was starving and I needed some food. So I was at the Denver airport and I went to a Mexican restaurant there and I got a grilled veggie burrito. It was grilled vegetables, a burrito. And I took my burrito and my chips and salsa and I sat down in this really tiny restaurant to eat my burrito. The tables were pretty close together, so I practically sat on this guy's lap to eat my burrito. And so it was inevitable that we talk. And very quickly, it came up that I was traveling to, I think I was going to Detroit at that point, and he asked what I was doing traveling there, and I told him I was giving some talks about veganism. And very quickly, we got into a discussion, a really intense discussion. Now, this conversation with him probably lasted all of a half hour, if even that. But really quickly, we got into some really intense discussion about this. And he told me that he works in the flooring industry. I believe it was the flooring industry. So one of his clients was a chicken processing plant. And I believed he lived in South Carolina or North Carolina, where there's a lot of that down there. And he said he was just completely taken aback and disgusted by what he saw in these processing plants. And it put him off of eating chickens. And I was just fascinated by the fact that's how he came to see such a thing. You just never know where your path will lead you. And it turned out this guy was pretty religious. I don't remember what religion exactly it was. It was a Christian religion where they follow the laws in the Bible that mandates against eating the unclean animals. So he was saying that he and his family didn't eat pigs or whatever animals are considered unclean. And in a very sympathetic voice, I said, well, you know, too bad all of the animals aren't considered unclean because then they wouldn't be eaten. And he got it and he smiled and he kept talking and it was all good and it was all really friendly. And he went on to say that he and his family, his wife and his children, are very active in their church. And he said something else about the Bible and animals. He said something about, you know, again, the Bible kind of mandates that they eat animals. And I said, again, very respectfully and sympathetically, that it works out pretty well for humans that the Bible says it's okay to eat animals because the humans wrote the Bible. I said it would probably be a different story if the animals wrote that book. And he got it. I mean, he totally understood and he laughed and he's like, yeah, it's a really good point, you know, because I said, no matter what we do, we can always find something to justify what we're doing. And I said, certainly when it comes to the Bible, we could turn to it for anything and justify what we're doing. It's just really a matter of convenience and it's a matter of finding an argument to defend our behavior. And he totally understood, got it immediately. And I could see his wheels turning. And so he said something in agreement. And I asked him, you know, again, we were kind of discussing the Bible at this point. And so I said, like, isn't it true in the Bible that the Garden of Eden was created as the most ideal place, the most ideal state of being for creation and for human beings? I said, you know, isn't that what God intended for humans, to be at peace and harmony with nature and other animals, to be nonviolent? And he said, yes, that was true. So I said, well, you know, that's clearly what the ideal place is then. So whatever happens after that obviously came after the fall. Now, I am not a Bible scholar. I'm not pretending to be a Bible scholar or a scholar of religion, but I do have that basic understanding that humans were given the permission to eat animals after the fall. And so they had already fallen from grace. And so they were away from that perfect, ideal place. And so the place we want to aspire to is that place of nonviolence and peace and harmony. And again, he agreed. And so then he went on to tell me about a fast that he had gone on. He and his brother had gone on some kind of fast for 21 days. And I think they drank only water and ate brown rice, something pretty drastic. And so he said when he started incorporating food back into his diet, he was eating primarily just fruits and vegetables at that point. And he said that, you know, he just felt better than he had ever felt before, lighter. He looked better than he had ever felt before when he was eating just the fruits and vegetables. And then slowly his wife wasn't doing the diet with him. So she was making animals for their children, and he eventually started eating meat again. And, you know, he admitted that it just happened out of habit. Now, I have no idea if our little conversation meant anything to him at all, but it was a really lovely conversation, and I was grateful to have this unexpected encounter, and it was so positive and just really respectful and lovely. And as I've said before, all we can do is do that. All we can do is plant seeds and trust them to grow without us. And so we parted and went our separate ways, and I wished him well, and I still do. Now, when I was flying back from this 3-city tour, I was pretty tired. I just really wanted some quiet. I was pretty exhausted. I had tabled all day in Denver on Saturday, and then I spoke, and then tabled a little bit, and then went off to the airport to fly to Detroit. And then that Sunday, I tabled for several hours, and then I spoke, and then I signed books and tabled, and then I spoke again, and then I tabled and signed some more books. It was wonderful, and it was lovely, and it was just fantastic meeting so many wonderful people, but I was pretty spent. And then Monday, we drove to Cleveland, we being a podcast listener and sponsor, Adina, whose name you've probably heard before, and she drove me to Cleveland, where I spoke that night. And so I flew out pretty early the next morning, and when I was on the plane, I was just so excited to have some quiet. But on this leg between, I guess at that point it was Cleveland and Colorado, I sat nice to a nice guy, and the conversation came up pretty quickly, the conversation about veganism. You know, it was pretty easy for this topic to come up because I was flying for this purpose. But, you know, if you're in the situation and you are not giving talks about veganism, there's probably a way you could get it into the conversation so it comes up pretty easy. I'm not saying you make up stories, but there's probably a way you could fit it into the conversation so you can talk about it. So it turned out that this guy was on a year-long lecture circuit, and he was some kind of consultant that trained people in some aspect of business. I don't know exactly what it was, but we bonded over the issue of public speaking pretty quickly. And so he asked what I spoke about, and naturally I told him what I was speaking about, and I showed him my cookbook, The Joy of Vegan Baking. And nice as he was, and no matter how many times I said it, he would say, so Vulcan, Vegan, Vegan. He couldn't say vegan. Like, I don't know if he wouldn't or couldn't say it, but he never said vegan. And this happened several times. It was really funny. But whatever, it was fine. And then his questions started coming. He asked about what I eat. You know, it's a pretty typical question we all get. You know, what do you eat? But he also asked specifically about the bagel I was eating. He asked how I stayed thin eating things like bagels. And I said, well, you know, it's a bagel, but I don't normally eat bagels. But I was hungry and I had a bagel. So he went on to tell me that he was on the Atkins diet for many years and that he had lost a lot of weight. And I told him that I was glad he lost weight, but that there are much safer, better ways to lose weight, and that it was very dangerous. It's a very dangerous diet. And he revealed to me that the diet actually triggered in him an eating disorder. He became pathologically afraid of carbohydrates. He ate virtually no carbohydrates, and he would wash his hands if they even touched a bread product. He told me about an incident where he had donuts or bagels, I think, something like that. I mean, it was bagels for his daughter. And you know how there's like that powdery kind of flour. He touched it when he was giving it to her. He touched the bag or something, and he freaked out, and he was telling me this, and it was really, you know, it's just really sad. These are not healthful habits, this is just not good. And he admitted that my veganism seemed completely normal next to the obsessive compulsive cycle that he was in. And I certainly agreed with that. And then the topic of religion came up with this guy. And as I said earlier, I do feel out the person I'm talking to, listening closely to what they're talking about and what they care about, and speaking to those points when I respond. And you probably know that I talk frequently about the peace of mind that you get from aligning your food choices with your values. And I talked about how my veganism touches all areas of my life and all of my values of nonviolence and simplicity and kindness and compassion. And these are all things that someone of a religious or spiritual mind can appreciate. So somehow the conversation had turned to that topic of nonviolence and religion and peace. And he asked if I ever find that people say that veganism goes against their religion. And I was kind of surprised because I see veganism as quite the opposite. So I asked him to clarify, and he said something like, well, most religious people think that eating animals is sanctioned by God. Most religions feel it's okay. And again, I asked him, I think I may have even said, like, you know, I'm not a scholar of world religions, but in my limited knowledge, it seems to me that all the world religions have compassion and nonviolence as their highest ethic, right? I mean, don't religions ask that people strive to be their most virtuous and their most kind and their most compassionate and cause as little harm as possible? Because it seems to me that veganism is actually in alignment with, rather than at odds with, the world religions. And he absolutely agreed. And so we talked more about that, just about religion and food and veganism. And again, it was very pleasant. Now, do I think that this man stopped eating a low-carb diet because of our conversation, or that he became vegan, or that he learned how to pronounce the word vegan? No, I don't have any expectations of or attachments to the people I talk to. But for those few moments I have, when I can see that this person is open and interested, I'm elated. It's what gives me hope. And so I walk away feeling hopeful. And again, seeds were planted, and I have no idea what's going to happen from that. It's not mine to really worry about. Now, not every encounter is a winner, but we do the best we can. On the second leg of that flight from Colorado to Oakland, I really, really needed quiet. I'm sure you know what it's like when you've talked for, I don't know, 3 days straight, and you just need quiet, like you can't physically talk anymore. So I was really happy to have some downtime, and I put my iPod out, and I had my book, and I had my laptop and a crossword puzzle, and I was so thrilled that the seat next to me was empty, even though I thought, well, this is not going to last. And it went on for quite some time, which was really awesome, but it didn't last, because right before the doors closed, a guy jumped on the plane, and he was a very loud guy and not someone I would have chosen to sit next to if I had the choice, but I didn't have a choice. And the plane sat on the tarmac for a while, so we were allowed to have our electronic devices on. And this guy, he was just really difficult to sit next to. He was speaking very loudly on his cell phone, and that's already a pet peeve of mine, to just talk on a cell phone in a public space, but it was really loud, and what he was saying was really inappropriate for, you know, for a group of strangers to hear. It was just really annoying, and I was really anxious to just kind of stay in my own little world and listen to my iPod, and I turned up the volume, and I was doing my crossword puzzle, and I really tried to ignore him. He just wasn't someone I wanted to have a conversation with. And what, lessons and gifts, right? I mean, those are the only things that we get in this world, are lessons and gifts. So, you know, you don't always want them, but sometimes you're forced to take them. So the plane was finally ready for takeoff, and I had to take off my earphones. And so I sat consumed in a crossword puzzle, and a crossword puzzle is usually a one-person event. That politely says, you know, I'm alone here, focused on my cross. It's like solitaire. It's like you're playing solitaire and someone comes in and wants to play solitaire with you. It's not a two-person game. It's just by nature. But now I wasn't able to hide behind my earphones. And so this guy started talking to me, and he said something like, you know, I don't know. He said something like, well, that's pretty bold of you to do a crossword puzzle with a pen. And I was like, yes, that's true. I had nothing else to say. So I kept doing my crossword puzzle, and I really am someone who talks to anyone and everyone, but I didn't want to talk to this guy, mainly because of my fatigue, but also because he hadn't made a very good first impression. So then he turns to me and said, "Can I try your crossword puzzle? Can I try to answer one?" And so I turned to him and said, "No, it's my crossword puzzle." And I told him that there's crossword etiquette and that it's sacrilegious to work on someone else's crossword puzzle if they haven't relinquished control. So in the nicest way possible, I said, "No, you can't work on my crossword puzzle." And so that exchange went on for a bit, kind of awkward and kind of, yeah, it was interesting. And so finally, the topic came up. I don't remember how it came up, but somehow animals came up. And he made some silly joke. I don't remember what it was, but some silly joke about animals. So I just knew I was in dangerous territory with this guy. And I just didn't want to go there, but I really didn't have a choice. So he kept asking questions. And I just feel obligated to answer as politely as possible, especially if it's going to mean this guy will have a new perspective on animal issues and veganism, etc. But then, of course, he asked the questions that I would have expected him to ask. He insisted that humans were supposed to eat animals because of our eye teeth. And I challenged him to go run after a steer and to take him down with his claws and rip at his flesh with his eye teeth, and told him that it really wasn't going to be possible. And he thought about that for a minute, but I could tell it still didn't faze him. I don't think each time he asked a question, he wasn't really listening to my answer. I could tell his wheels were just turning, ready to ask the next question and ready to just challenge me again. So it was kind of getting pretty tense. He said that he had a dog and he loved his dog. And I asked, "Well, what was the difference between eating his dog and eating a cow?" And he said, "That's ridiculous. Like, he loves his dog and why would he eat his dog? You know, but he has eaten dogs," he said, "in other countries, and he loved, the dogs were good." And then he told me that, he told me that he was doing his part, and he told me that he was doing his part in this world to make this world a better place. He told me that he was buying properties and renting out these properties for low rent so that he could help people who were having financial difficulties. And so I said, "That's great. That's really good for you. That's really fantastic. But how would stopping eating animals hinder his ability to provide low rent housing?" But he would just insist that he was just doing one thing at a time, that, you just do one thing at a time, which makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't know if you heard this recently, but Al Gore, who espouses personal changes to stop global warming, he was finally cornered and asked if he ate meat. And was asked, "You do realize that the production of meat actually produces more greenhouse gases than, say, driving a car." And so when he was finally cornered to answer this question, he said something like, "Well, we do what we can. I'm doing this and we do what we can. Like, you do your thing and I'll do my thing." And it's absolutely ridiculous, because eating animals is actually contributing to the very thing that he says he wants to stop. So very interesting. And so this guy's argument was kind of the same. This is what I'm doing. Okay, so fine. So I left it at that, and I really tried to just sit and not have the conversation with this guy anymore. It got pretty heated at one point. So please don't ever think that, that I don't have these experiences too. It really depends on who you're talking to, even if you're doing the best you can. Some people just don't want to listen. And I do hear from people who say to me, "I've been talking to this coworker and they're driving me crazy, and my parents or my family or whoever it is that people recognize as being compassionate, good, kind people, and they say they love their cats and dogs, but they keep eating animals and they just don't want to hear what I have to say, and they close their ears and they say, 'Don't tell me, I don't want to know.'" People ask me what to do in those situations, and honestly, some people you have to let go. Some people you have to just let go of. Not every single one is going to be a winner. Teach by example, continue to be the joyful vegan that you are, give them delicious vegan food, but some people you just have to let go. Why would I waste my time and energy on someone who is just resistant, just completely resistant? That doesn't mean, again, that I become disrespectful or I write them off. I still have hope, but I'm not going to waste my time and energy. And that's what this guy was. It was, if I kept going, it just would have been wasting my energy and my time and my breath on someone who really had really no interest in what I had to say. I would rather focus on people who are interested and open. And I believe, and I have learned over the many years I've been doing this, that there are plenty of those people in this world. So don't keep knocking your head against the wall if you find that it's just made of bricks. This guy made of bricks, right? But even if, since you've started advocating for animals and veganism, even if you've encountered 5 resistant people, 10 resistant people, 15 resistant people, I promise you there is someone out there who wants to hear this and they want to hear it from you. So don't give up. But this guy, yeah, at one point I did get my meal. It was an Indian, you know, vegan Indian meal, and he had some chicken salad or something. And he did say that my meal looked a lot better than his. And I told him it was damn good. It was damn good. There's like some pretty good food. When you get the vegan option, it's really good food. So we said goodbye. I don't even know if I said goodbye. Things had just kind of broken down at that point. So that was that. And I was just happy to get home and really be quiet. Now on another flight, I think this was a recent trip I took to Minnesota. And so I had to go from Oakland to Denver to Minnesota. And so I think it was the flight on the leg from Denver to Minnesota. I sat next to this super, super, super sweet guy. He was really respectful of my space. He recognized that I had, you know, all my stuff out, which, you know, is kind of a way of saying I'm busy. I've got things to occupy me. I was reading my book. This was definitely to Minneapolis. I was reading McTeague. If you've never read Frank Norris, I highly recommend Frank Norris. This was McTeague I was reading. And I also recommend The Octopus, which is fantastic. So anyway, that's an aside. So I had my book out and I had everything out. And I think he may have even asked me what I was reading and what it was about. And so I told him. And so then the conversation again went very quickly to, you know, why are you traveling to Minnesota? Are you traveling on business or pleasure? And I explained that it was one and the same for me, thank goodness. And I told him what I was doing there and what I was talking about. Now, this guy was Indian. He was from India, and he had been on a work visa in the U.S. for years and years. He had been in the U.S. for a long time, but he was originally from India. So his response to my telling him that I was talking about veganism and that the topic of my talk was being a joyful vegan in a non-vegan world, his response was pretty positive. He was not vegetarian, but he's known a lot of vegetarians. And he started telling me that, you know, he doesn't really like eating animals, that he just does so for no reason, that it's just a habit, that that's how he was raised. He was starting to think about people he knew, and he told me about his wife's uncle back in India, who was a vegetarian evangelist of sorts. He would just go around, tells anyone who listened that it's the most compassionate way to eat, being vegetarian, that it's good for the body, that it's good for the soul. And I joked that clearly that hadn't rubbed off on him yet, because this guy was still not vegetarian. And he laughed. And, you know, again, he was just really just thinking about this stuff. Like, it was almost like he had never thought about it before. And so we started talking, and he was really open and really sweet and really interested in what I had to say. And one of the questions at one point, he asked me how I felt about people eating meat in front of me. He asked if it was offensive or if it bothered me. And I said, yes, I've had that happen before when I've been with people who were non-vegetarian, who asked, would you be offended if I ate meat? And I've said, yes. I don't, you know, maybe some people would say no, but I don't know why I should lie about something like that. So I've been in mixed company when we're at a restaurant in kind of a small intimate group. And this was a neighbor in particular that I'm thinking of. I was at dinner with them, and he said, would you be offended if I got meat? And I said, yeah, I would. I mean, the question was, would you be offended? And the answer, the truth is yes. I didn't say don't get it. I just said, in answer to your question, yes, I would be offended. So anyway, this guy really understood why I'd be offended. I told him, once you see it for what it is, you can't help but see suffering when you look at it. So he was really cute, because we got food not long after that. And my food was just, I think it was just fruit and nuts or something. And it was just a snack on the plane, but of course they've got to throw animals in everything. So his was fruit and nuts and ham or something, some kind of animal wrapped up in fruit or something like that. And so he really felt bad, and he kept apologizing. He's like, I didn't think there'd be meat. I didn't know. I thought it was just going to be fruit. I would have asked them to not put the meat on. And he didn't eat the meat, which was really true to the character that I had already seen up to that point. It was really It was really lovely. And the more we talked, the more I could see his wheels turning. And he asked some of the typical questions, you know, in a very non-defensive way. He said, well, what about plants? Don't you think plants suffer? What about plants? Something like that. And I've heard this question a million times, and sometimes it's just hard to answer. So I have a different response every time. Again, I don't know how I'm going to answer when someone asks something like that. And I just smiled and I said, what do you think? What do you think? Do you think I'm hurting plants? And he smiled and he said, yeah, no, I don't really think so. Because that question is meant to get away from the real issue. And the real issue is that animals do suffer. That we know for sure. And I told him that. And I told him that I believe that we just do the best we can with the information we have now, here and now. That here and now we know that animals do suffer, that they feel pain, that they want to live. And I assured him that if new information comes down the pike and we learn that plants have a nervous system and that they suffer the same way animals do, then I'll have to rethink a few things. But based on the information we have now, that's not the case. It's a red herring. Nothing against herrings, but it's a red herring to distract us from the real issue, which is the plain old fact that we can survive and in fact thrive without consuming animals. And when we can prevent violence, we should. That's it for me, plain and simple. And he agreed wholeheartedly, and he felt silly for asking, but it was fine. It was, like I said, a very friendly conversation. So we went on some more. We talked some more. I finally got to read. And when we were leaving, I gave him a copy of my DVD. I'm so bummed that my podcast, so the sampler CDs weren't out yet, because this would have been the perfect opportunity to, you know, give someone one. But he was thrilled to get the DVD, and he told me that he was going to check it out, and that he was really sincere about it, and he was going to watch the DVD. And I have no idea if he did or if he will. Maybe he's listening now. I don't know. But it was a wonderful conversation. And it's one that I'll always have as an example of how fabulous people can be. He was open and humble and honest, some of my favorite qualities in people. So that was fantastic. And then on the way back from Minnesota, it was even better. Can't believe it could be even better, but it was even better. So yeah, at this point, I've kind of given up having time to read on planes, because if it comes down to talking to someone about veganism or animals, you know, that versus reading, which I love to do, I'm still going to choose the former. So this conversation started pretty immediately, literally as I was getting on the plane. I was standing next to the attendant, and while we were waiting for people to put their bags up, I turned to this one attendant and I just wanted to confirm early on that I had a vegan meal. And she said she would look, but she didn't see any special meals on her list, and she wasn't sure. But very quickly she said, so are you vegan? And I told her I was, and she said she had just read Skinny Bitch, there you go, Jenica, and had stopped eating land animals and was working her way towards being vegan. And I said, oh, that's fantastic. That's great. And she said, yeah, it was pretty immediate. I just immediately stopped eating animals right away and, you know, kind of said the thing that most people say, I liked animals when I was a kid. I didn't really want to eat them. It just became habit. But she said that she was nervous about veganism because her friends kept telling her that she wouldn't get enough nutrients. And then she kind of stepped back and looked at me and she goes, well, you look great. You just look really healthy. And I said, yes, well, you know, you'll get all of the nutrients, if not more of the nutrients you need, because the nutrients we need are plant-based. And so I encouraged her to ask me any questions she had while we were on the flight. I told her what I did for a living, and I invited her to just, you know, come over and ask me any questions. And so she did, and we talked the entire time. She came over the entire flight. It was so cute because she kept coming over and saying, so I just have one more. What about, can you just tell me, what about this? And someone told me this, and what do you think about this? And how about this? And it was just too darn cute. So it was really awesome. And when we were getting off the plane, I gave her a DVD or a book or something, and she was so thrilled. And she was, again, really sincere and said, I am definitely going to read this, and I'm definitely going to check out your website and your podcast. Did she? I don't know. You know, is she vegan now? I don't know. I have no idea, but I don't regret one moment that I spent talking to her on that two and a half hour plane ride. Because the time we take to invest in, first of all, learning about the issues, animal rights issues, nutrition, food, cooking, the better advocates we'll be. And the time we invest in having these conversations with strangers about these issues, the more we raise awareness, the more we empower other people. It pays dividends. dividends, even if you don't benefit, even if you don't get those dividends back, you get them in terms of hope. You get them in terms of, you know, certainly talking about these issues yourself and kind of clarifying them in your own head. Now, I'm not saying you have to do this all the time. I realize sometimes you might just want to have a relaxing plane ride or a relaxing dinner or whatever, but I can't help but look at these moments as golden opportunities. Just the fact that you're a pleasant, respectful, informed, healthy person will go a long way in representing what a vegan looks like to the world. I mean, no pressure, just be yourself and be joyful if that's your truth. But do consider what an amazing opportunity it is to have these one-on-one conversations with people. And as I said, it never hurts to give them additional materials that they can peruse on their own time. So to recap some of the things I talked about here, try and listen to the other person so that your responses will be relevant to their interests and their concerns or their needs. Keep a sense of humor. You can lighten up even the most intense information by changing the tone of your voice or by smiling. Ask questions. Don't always feel you have to have the answers, but also phrase things in the form of a question. It really disarms people. It really makes them feel like they're on the same plane with you. So instead of saying something like, well, actually it's like this, you could say something like, well, don't you think that, or isn't it true that, or don't you think that, you know, it just really changes the nature of the discussion, the nature of the dialogue. Be humble. If you're not an expert in something that they're asking about, say so. And speak from your heart. You cannot go wrong if you speak from your heart. Until next time, I'd like to leave you with a beautiful thought from Robert F. Kennedy from a speech he gave in South Africa in 1966. Perhaps you've heard it. Among other things, he said, "Each time a man," and this applies to women too, "each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." Don't underestimate the power of one person, the power of one conversation, and the power of the truth you hold in your heart. For the animals, both human and non-human, this is Colleen with Compassionate Cooks. Thanks for listening.